Hello, everybody. My name is Phil. This is a talk about a project I worked on at Yahoo last year, for most of last year, to convert one of our main sets of Yahoo Mail servers to a different software management system, and kind of tell you about, you know, what we learned and what worked, what didn't, all the usual stuff. So, this is a set of about 7,500 machines. We used a kind of a traditional software push mechanism, an in-house tool called Yinst, which works similarly to RPM or Debian. You had packages and then automated dependency resolution for packages. And the problem with this over a large number of machines is it's non-deterministic. Because if you install a package that has a dependency, our system goes and pulls in the stable version of the dependency. The next time you do an install, if the stable version of the dependency is changed, then you end up with a different version of the dependent package. So if you're doing this over a large number of hosts, it's impossible to lock down all the packages on a machine. So our goals, you know, kind of the obvious ones, we wanted repeatable software pushes. We wanted to exactly specify how our installs work. We had a philosophy called all apps, all environments, which basically just meant every machine gets the same software packages. And we wanted to be able to roll back to previous releases. So we already had a tool set to use. I mean, kind of an obvious question with this kind of stuff is, well, why don't you use Puppet or CF Engine or you know, some sort of configuration management tool. We kind of already had those at Yahoo, so since we had installed systems, we didn't really want to reinvent the wheel. We had our package management system, Yinst. We had a state definition tool called Igor, and SRM was our assembly tool, and then a software deployment tool called Pogo, which is similar to Capistrano, if anybody's looked at that. So these machines are in a farm setup. So kind of your typical farm environment. You had these web front ends. You had some back-end storage machines and a couple of catch-all servers. Around 20 machines per farm. Every Yahoo Mail user lives on a farm. That's where your mail is stored. And farms are mostly independent from other farms. So we have about 550 of these farms globally for the total of about 7,500 machines. So the beginning of this process was kind of to map it all out. We had this list of packages that we had been installing on these machines using our old push mechanism, which we were deprecating. And that was over a number of years, there was kind of an accretion of all these packages on these machines. We didn't ever do rollback. We didn't ever really remove packages. We would even get into positions sometimes where we would install a new package to fix a previous package. So after a few years, that got pretty hairy. So we sat down with old developers and said, OK, here's all the packages. You guys have to decide what functional areas they belong to. So we did that. We broke it down to like 25 different kind of functional areas, each kind of owned by a separate development group. We tried to find hidden package dependencies and assumptions. We had hoped to reduce the number of packages we had installed. We started with about 1,300, and we have about 1,300 now. So that didn't work so well. After kind of breaking down what stuff we wanted to install, we had to test it and just try to make it work. So we set up some VM test environment machines, which worked really well because we could reset the machine really quickly, try a new software install. When it failed, you know, reset it and do it again. It was a very iterative process, as was most of this. And, you know, literally several months of my life was spent just doing these test installs, finding problems with the installs, filing bugs, getting developers to fix their packages, and just kind of, you know, rinse, lather, repeat. So once we worked on that for a few months, we got to the point where we had a working install. So instead of just saying, here's this pile of packages installed on a machine, we could take that set of packages in Yinst and sort them out using solely the dependency information in those packages So they all got installed in the proper order. All their startup scripts worked correctly. And that was the point at which we wanted to start doing production installs. We had hoped to do those installs on top of live machines, you know, take a machine out of rotation, do the Igor restore to set it to an exact set of packages and settings, and then put it back in rotation. That didn't work for a couple of reasons. One was circular dependencies and packages that were just too much of a mess and made our packaging system give up. And packages with stop scripts that didn't work because they'd never been adequately tested. If you have a deployment system that only puts new packages on, there's not a lot of testing of removing packages, and there's a lot of ways where package removals fail. So we realized that we would have to do our OS reinstall on all these machines. So that obviously extended the length of the project, but it did have the advantage of getting all our machines to exactly the same OS version. And luckily, Yahoo has a pretty robust mechanism and infrastructure for doing automated machine wipes and OS reinstalls with the whole Pixie boot thing. So it ended up being about a six-person team, split halfway between Sunnyvale and Bangalore. Obviously, I was one of the people in Sunnyvale. I was the lead of the project, so I kind of turned into the scout. I would spend my time looking at upcoming farms and auditing them, and then based on the auditing work, fixing them up so they'd be prepared for the conversions. The auditing issues were things like we had assumed that all the hosts on a farm had the same settings. That wasn't the case. One example is the machines had to talk to our, you know, our universal user database, and over time various machines would be set to different point of different replicas for that. And so somebody had to go in and make requests to the user database people to switch those machines over before we wiped them, because we made this requirement that all the machines on the farm would be set up exactly the same. So that ended up being about 9 months' work total. Like I said, split between about six people. Lots of IRC conversations, lots of late nights. One thing that worked really well was kind of doing a rolling process between the US team and the Bangalore team. We have a formal change management process at Yahoo, so you had to file CMRs to get work done. So since we had this rolling windows between these two teams, one team could file the CMRs for the next team to do their work, and you can kind of just do it continually. So that was the kind of the process in a nutshell. And after about, like I said, after about 9 months, we had all our farms converted. So the challenge there is when you're in the middle of this, you've got two release processes running. You've got the old process with our old additive push tool, and you've got this new process where we're trying to use Igor, trying to use SRM to build an exact release and install it on all the machines. So as I'll talk about in a bit, that was kind of one of the major pain points. But the way the new release assembly process worked is there, for all these 25 or so functional areas, there'd be an owner, typically somebody in development, and that owner would be responsible for giving us a tag. And a tag is basically just a pointer to the exact packages and settings for their functional area in our Igor tool. And you put all these tags together in SRM, and that generates a release tag, which, if you go do a lookup in Igor, gives you the exact set of packages and settings and install on a machine. So we kind of worked out, we kind of worked that process out kind of in parallel to the conversion process. We didn't really know going into it exactly how we were going to do it, so it was kind of a learning experience. So the development group, since there's so many of them involved in these machines, they feed their changes into us in release management. We do the release assembly using SRM, and we do basic functionality testing, basically that the release works. Can you do rollback? Can you install on top of the previous release? Can you do a bare metal install? If that stuff passes, we hand it off to QA, and then QA does their functional testing of the actual software. And if that works, they sign off, and we say, okay, the train's ready to go, and we just do that every 3 weeks forever. So the release management team sets the schedule for deployments. It takes about 10 days currently. We use a fairly obvious, you know, go to one farm, monitor if there's any problems, go to some more farms, and then do that a couple more times until you've covered everything. We could cut this schedule down quite a bit, and we kind of have a goal to. One of the reasons it takes so long now is we don't do any pushes over the weekends, and we try to leave some time for people to do monitoring in between each wave. And a key point is, like I said, we wanted to get rollback working. So at any time in this process, if somebody detects a problem with the release, we halt the release, we roll it back out of production, which removes all the new packages and settings, and sets the machines back to the previous release. And we do that every few months. We probably had, in the last year and a half, 2 years, we've had like two or three major rollbacks. So, looking at this project, what worked great was defining system state at the package level. Since we already had all this other infrastructure for kind of automatically setting up machines, we didn't have to spend a lot of time on configuration management outside of packages. And we already had this history of doing a lot of this with packages. So we were pretty happy with the way it turned out, that we could, if we put together the set of packages and their associated settings, that's a pretty good representation of the state of the machine. All apps, all environments was a huge win for us, and I strongly recommend it for anybody doing any sort of massive software deployments. For example, we used to have separate packages that went on partner farms, farms for AT&T and other broadband partners versus the free farms. We eliminated that. We put all the packages on all the farms and just use settings to turn them on and off on particular farms. And rollback works great. I think I have another slide on that. So one thing that a lot of people are suspicious about or don't believe us is that rollback does work. And my answer to that is it does work if you invest a huge amount of upfront time. The only reason we know rollback works is we test it thoroughly before we go to production. We put these releases together, we install them on our sample farms, our QA test farms. We roll them back and forth, we look at logs, and we have a health check mechanism. So we know before we go to production that all the mechanics of rollback are there. And that really requires a commitment to quality packaging. You have to make sure that people write good packages that they give to you, and that you spend a lot of time on packaging scripts. And this is a general problem with software releases, right? Because you've got developers working on their packages, and they're doing all these exciting things, all this exciting functionality, and then you tell them, oh, you got to write these install scripts too. Nobody wants to do that, right? So the people who do the install scripts are always the most junior person who kind of gets assigned to do it because it's by default, because the senior people are doing something more exciting. So it's actually a big part of our release management process these days is kind of working with development to do best practices for this kind of stuff. And you also have to be really careful to decouple packages from settings. We used to have a lot of packages that essentially contain settings via configuration files. And if you roll back that setting in a package, then you've just lost a setting. So if you do that, you tie your settings to the releases, and you don't want that to happen. So we've invested a lot of time into things like central config servers, where all these machines are querying some central machines and getting whatever config they need. Some things we wish we would have done differently. Man, I wish we would have done some audit tools before we started. We didn't have a good idea of how much variation there was in these mail farms before we started. So literally, when we first started going to production, we were like, whoa, all these machines are set differently. So in retrospect, we should have done a ton more auditing before we got to production. Because once we got to that point, we had to ask the mail tools team, hey, will you write some scripts to query all these machines on the farm and extract all the differences and let us do something with them. Similarly, our push tool didn't come along for about 6 months. And architecturally, our previous push tool didn't really work for what we were trying to do. So we had a long process of kind of semi-manual pushes to a lot of machines, which obviously was pretty difficult. As I mentioned, we had this mixed state window for a long time because the conversion process took so long. So, it would have been nice if there was some way we could have been able to cut that down, probably with quicker auditing. And we started with a 2-week release cycle, but we moved to 3. I'd like it to be 4 because doing these complex releases in this amount of time is just really, is still really hard to do. Some of the big ongoing things we're working on, we're continuing the work to remove configuration from packages. Obviously a challenge, you've got old packages, nobody even, you know, the people who wrote them don't work at the company anymore, nobody's quite sure how they work. And that, as I said, so that's either through config servers or extracting the packages into these YNET settings which go along with our packaging tool. We've done a lot of work with sync monitoring. So you've got all these machines, they're supposed to all be synchronized exactly the same set of packages and settings. How do you determine that? Well, we've got a client that runs on every machine and checks its state against what's in the Igor database and then bubbles it up to our alerting tool. When you've got that many machines to deal with, there's always a lot of weird out-of-sync conditions, so we're still doing a lot of work on that. We're still learning how to deal with emergencies more smoothly. If you have like a critical security fix got to go out right away, we can do that in a couple days. You know, we'd like to get that down even further. A lot of that is tough because it's tied to, one, we don't want to do pushes during production hours. So we've got the U.S. team doing pushes international, and then we've got the Bangalore team doing the U.S. pushes. And then it's so geographically separated that just getting all the stuff to run on all these different machines, you know, quickly is a challenge. So here's my kind of sum it up slide. I kind of say keep it stupid simple. The number one thing we've learned on this project is if you do something clever, it's a bad idea. Because whenever you do something clever, you multiply that by thousands of machines and horrible things go wrong. So our whole mantra is just, you know, install the packages everywhere, use settings to control whether or not particular things get activated. Don't inherit system state. Our Igor database mechanism allows you to inherit rules. So you could define some package at a top level and get it installed on all the machines everywhere by inheritance. But that violates our notion of just one release, because then you end up doing that for multiple packages and settings. You've got these slightly different releases everywhere that you haven't really tested. So, you know, basically, my advice on large-scale software management is just don't be clever. Just think of the simplest way you can do it and do it that way. And that's all the slides I have.
Hi, I have two questions. So for the package management system itself, can you talk a little bit about how it's different from like something like RPM or Debian?
It's really kind of the same thing. It's just we've got individual packages that have a manifest that describes them. It's pretty tightly integrated into our distribution system. So basically anybody can create a package and automatically upload it, and then it's available to all production servers worldwide. So that's kind of an enhancement specific to what we do. And there's this, the YNET setting system, which any package can have. You can set any arbitrary string setting you want for any package. So that's how we pull a lot of this configuration stuff out, is by using this setting system that's built into our packaging system.
And does this run on Linux or any?
We're on FreeBSD right now.
Oh, okay.
We're moving towards Linux. That'll be the next couple of years. This will all be running on Linux.
Okay.
But right now it is FreeBSD focused.
And the second question is about your Pogo, I guess, sort of pushing out the packages. Can you describe like the mechanism? Does it use?
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually had more about Pogo in this, but I cut it out because it made my talk too long.
Okay.
So Pogo is just a general purpose, massively parallel SSH execution tool. Like I said, I think Capistrano seems pretty similar. I've been reading about that. So Pogo has the ability to just launch SSH to huge numbers of machines at once, run an arbitrary command on each of those machines, and collect all the results. So it also has a constraint system. So we say, you know, on a given farm, you can only take down 25% of the machines at a time. So Pogo has that logic embedded in it, so it knows not to wipe not to take the whole farm down to do the restore.
But I guess it's not. So I'm thinking more of like maybe using some sort of like BitTorrent way of distributing it. So I guess this sounds more like a parallel push mechanism.
Yeah, yes. It's okay. Absolutely right. As parallel as possible. Like I said, you know, if we're pushing to 200 farms,
right,
we're launching one Pogo job,
right,
to those 2,000 machines, and then somebody's monitoring those. There's a retry mechanism built in. So as the jobs are running, we've got a push master watching that. If machines fail, you can try to correct them within our push window and then just automatically relaunch the push.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hi, Paul Krizak at AMD. I'm curious what your scalability expectations are. I mean, obviously, Yahoo's going to keep growing and growing and growing. It's going to go from 500 farms to thousands of farms at some point. At what point do you think that this system is going to start falling over, and what are the pinch points you think you're going to hit first, and do you have any mitigation plans for them?
I think a nice thing about the system is I don't actually see any obvious failure points, particularly since the farm system is already pretty well distributed. You know, we've got software mirrors in every colo, so getting the software installed on machines is also already distributed. Pogo has a distributed launching mechanism. You throw more machines at it to launch more SSH connections. So in general, I don't really know. You know, we're at the point now where like the 10,000 machine, we can launch things on 10,000 machines at once. You know, 100,000 machines would probably hit a bunch of problems we haven't even thought about yet.
Well, what about the human element? I mean, you said you've got people like a pushmaster that,
yeah,
has to watch logs and stuff. I mean, at some point, you're going to start running into more data than a single person would be able to manage. And you get larger grids, and I'm imagining that you know, what happens if you have one of the machines in a farm happens to be down, and it comes up a day later, and it doesn't,
yeah,
have the updated software? How do you handle those,
yes,
kinds of situations as things grow?
That's a big problem. Right now, there definitely is quite a bit of manual intervention. You know, we've got somebody in India, somebody in Sunnyvale, who their full-time job is doing these pushes and other pushes we're doing. One part of the automation is health check. We do a lot of work where Pogo automatically, kind of before and after the job, does a lot of checks to make sure the machine is actually running and serving traffic. So that helps the automation. But we're still fairly manual as far as getting machines, you know, somebody's got to be looking at machines, filing tickets, getting machines, you know, re-imaged. Yeah, I mean, that process definitely has to be automated more.
Thank you.
Hugh Brown, University of British Columbia. In your last slide, you said the lessons learned, keep it simple, and don't use inheritance for system state. I was a little unclear on what you meant by that.
Yeah, I definitely could explain that better. So what I mean specifically is, don't use inheritance for defining the package and setting sets you're installing on a machine, because we're using these packages essentially for system state. Almost all of our system stuff is embedded in packages. And our tool we use, Igor, allows you to include roles within roles. So you can have this, you can have an arbitrarily complex pyramid of rules applying to every machine. And that's the specific thing that we really try to avoid. If there's a given machine, there's like the minimum number of roles, of Igor roles, necessary to get all the packages and settings installed. And we're not using overall kind of top-down Igor roles to influence that behavior. Because one thing we could do is we could say, okay, here's this critical package. Let's put it in a role that applies to every machine everywhere, and that'll automatically get installed the next time the machine gets a software push. But then you've got to maintain all this knowledge about how your environment is set up. And then you've also got to remember to test that in QA. So it's a lot simpler if we just say, OK, the set of stuff that applies on the machines just applies to this one farm. And we say it's the same across all farms. And we try not to kind of stack it up like that.
OK, thank you.
Matthew Sachs, GlassCode. I had a question about, excuse me. Do you package your code artifacts along with the actual application binaries, or do you keep them separate?
What do you mean by that?
For example, I don't know what kind of applications you guys run, but do you bundle like a WAR file with your servlet container if you're running Java applications, something like that?
So this is a lot of LAMP stuff. We tend to split those out. You know, we'll have a package. We've got our Apache package, and then we've got the various components that apply on top of that. So in general, we tend to use the dependency mechanisms in Wines to handle that. So it's fairly modular.
And then second question, in terms of auditing, you mentioned that you wished you had better auditing tools early on.
Yes.
But I missed it, I probably missed it, that what was your solution to that problem?
So I was speaking specifically the case of auditing these existing systems that we didn't really understand how they were configured. So those are kind of one-off tools. If you're doing a big conversion like this, it's really a good idea to try and do as much auditing as possible. Look over all your production machines and find the variations by, you know, just things like just by running some Perl script in every machine that gathers some sort of output. Gotcha. So those are the kind of auditing tools that we should have put a lot more work in when we started off.
And do you run those in production today to me?
No, that was the one-time stuff for doing this conversion. So now that we're in production, we rely on Igor. We say, okay, Igor gives us the exact set of packages and settings and exact package versions. So we rely on that to say, you know, if these packages and settings are installed on the machines, we assume the machine is correctly configured. Okay. And we work really hard to not allow people to do things like modify text files on machines. Like, you can't just go on a machine and change some config file by yourself.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, let's thank our speaker one more time.
Thank you.